Ganley. This is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Last year, half a dozen states have raised their gas taxes, and soon New Hampshire will join them. Governor Maggie Hassan says she'll sign the bill for a 4-cent increase when it comes to her desk. The Granite State and others have struggled for years with how to pay for infrastructure. Once reliable highway funds from Congress have become less generous and more uncertain, and federal gas taxes haven't gone up in 2 decades. Meanwhile, Americans are driving on roads not built to withstand the amounts of heavy traffic they experience today, and the wear and tear is starting to show. That was the argument that won the day in the New Hampshire legislature, with even some typically tax-averse lawmakers voting in favor of paying more at the pump if the money is guaranteed to solely go to infrastructure. Today in The Exchange, the road to the gas tax in the Granite State and what happens next. Also later, a proposed constitutional amendment to prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation. But first, let's hear from you on the gas tax. Do you think this 4-cent increase is the right step, or would another approach be better? Where do you hope the new money goes? Where shouldn't it go? Give us a call. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. With me in studio, three guests. Gary Reno is here, State House reporter for the Union Leader, and New Hampshire Sunday News. He's been covering both of those stories that I mentioned. Gary, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Good to be here, Laura.
Also with us, Gene Chandler, Republican House Minority Leader and a longtime state representative from Bartlett. Representative Chandler, good to see you. Thank you.
Good morning.
Also with us from Portland, Maine, Pat Moody, Manager of Public Affairs and Traffic Safety at AAA Northern New England. And Pat Moody, welcome back to The Exchange. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Well, talking about the gas tax, Gary, this has been a long discussion in the legislature, right? I mean, this is not anything new.
Well, no. I mean, last time we raised a gas tax was 1991. Since that time, there have been certain attempts. But, I mean, this has been the last 2 years have been the first real serious attempts to raise the gas tax. If you remember back in, I think, the first reelection campaign for that John Lynch, former Governor John Lynch had, he was running against a state representative named Jim Colburn, who made the mistake of going on close-up on Channel 9 and saying he could support a gas tax. And the barrage of ads came down, and so nobody ever really seriously proposed a gas tax when John Lynch was governor. So we have a change in the governors, and we had a gas tax proposed last session, which was 15 cents. It ended up being 12 cents. The House passed, the Senate killed. And then when the Senate killed it, Senator Jim Rausch from Derry, who is the chairman of the Transportation Committee in the Senate, said we really need to do something, and he begged the Senate president to let him come back with a proposal. So he came back this year with a proposal for basically a 4.2-cent increase in the gas tax.
Wow, so a lot of political history there. So yeah. Once John Lynch made this a campaign issue against his Republican opponent, he couldn't raise it, even if he later on thought it might have been a good idea.
Right. I mean, and I think maybe the last 2 years he was serving, he might have considered it because, I mean, things were getting pretty bad out there in terms of the highways and bridges and so on. But if you remember, that was when we had the very large Republican majority in the House and Senate, and that just wasn't going to happen.
And then, as you said, Gary, last year the House came up with this 15-cent increase. Now, not 15 all at once, you know, implemented over a couple years. And then that got put down to 12, and that was still too much to swallow for some folks.
It was, particularly in the Senate. I mean, it did pass the House. Not by an awful lot, but it did pass the House. It was a 4-cent increase over 3 years. And the Senate just blew it out of the water. It had a very poor vote in the Senate. And then they turned around and did what they – a parliamentary maneuver. So actually you can't bring it back in the second year of the session. But Senator Rausch got up and made this impassioned speech on the floor saying, we got to do something. We have to do something. And I'm asking the Senate president to consider this, that this won't be a 12-cent increase. It will be something else that I'll bring back.
And there are a couple particulars of this bill that we'll get into, including the fact that it's supposed to sunset in 20 years. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Yep.
Yeah, so Representative Chandler, you've been in the House for a long time. What's the feeling been, especially among Republicans, about raising the gas tax?
Well, there's kind of a number of issues. The gas tax is one thing. I will sit here having served my whole career, 30-something years, on the Public Works and Highways Committee in the House. And so I'm very familiar with the condition and of our roads and bridges, and they do need work. No one really, I say no one, you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone that would disagree with that. The problem that many of us have isn't so much with the tax. There was a problem with that, especially we've seen the gas prices going up 6 cents this week, and now we're on top of this. Other folks have used, well, if you drive 10,000 miles a year, well, who drives 10,000 miles a year in New Hampshire? Very, very few people. But getting past all of that, the reasons that myself and most Republicans objected to this bill were things other than the actual gas tax itself. And want me to explain those?
Yeah, okay. Please.
Among them, you know, for instance, the cities and towns get 12% of the revenues from the highway fund. They're not going to get that the first year. So there is no money going to the cities and towns for the first year. Okay. In this bill, stuck in the Senate, was a removal of one of the tolls in Merrimack. Well, there's a lot of problems with that, and the House had addressed that in the 10-year highway plan, which is before the Senate now, on how we thought we should proceed with that, and it was an orderly approach. There's a myriad of problems with trying to do something like this, just taking off one toll. Upsets the whole apple cart. Turnpike is separate than highways. That's almost a whole other subject in itself. It's not the proper place to have something like that in a gas tax bill, in many of us' opinion. The other thing, and I think this is almost the key thing, or one of the key things, that 42% of the revenue from this tax is going to the Route I-93 project. The I-93 project is critically important, should be a priority. The House has given $50 million in the 10-year plan to finishing 93 towards that. I just don't think that most of the constituents in the state that are going to be paying this realize that 42% of what they're going to pay of this increase is going to go to a project in the southern part of the state instead of their own secondary roads. And then the biggest thing, I guess, of all probably, is the legislatures, and I say this, mismanagement of the laws that we've passed governing use of highway funds. In 2008, we wisely passed a law limiting how much money could go out of the highway fund to other agencies.
It's well, siphoning off. People said the highway fund is being used like an ATM.
Yeah. So we wisely passed something that said the department, other departments are limited in what they can get. Well, two of the last three bienniums, Republican and Democrat both, we have gone against that. We have abdicated our responsibilities, in my opinion. And I think that's what makes people uneasy. There is nothing to say, nothing, if we get into the next budget, that all of this gas tax money could be used for other purposes. And until we can manage our own house and say, look, this money should go to the highway fund, it should go to roads and bridges, and until we do that, I think people should be suspect of what's going on.
So the money, Representative Chandler, in your opinion, was not cordoned off safely enough, put in that lockbox, if you want to use that.
Well, yes, you can't do that because the legislature can unlock the lockbox any time you want to, short of a constitutional amendment, which people are starting to talk about again, strengthening 6A with some other procedures, which will effectively put it in the lockbox. Because quite honestly, we in the legislature have not shown a willingness to comply with what we know is the right thing to do. So all this money, and as I say, those, well, you call them diversions, but the money over and above the law we passed in 2008 represents $38 million in highway funds, which should have gone to the highway fund, which didn't. That's $38 million.
Which it's been an ongoing discussion.
It's not the complete answer, but it would go quite a ways towards solving the problem.
All right, and we'll definitely pick up on a couple of those points that you made, Representative Chandler. But Patrick Moody, I want to get you into this. How does New Hampshire's move to raise the gas tax after more than 20 years fit into the bigger picture of what's happening with road funding around New England?
You know, I agree with a lot of what's been said already. The path to better transportation infrastructure, it does need to include more resources, and there's been no debate that we need more resources, but it also calls for better utilization of those resources. In 1991, when the last gas tax was moved, I was trying to figure out who I was going to go to my freshman semi-formal with in high school. So it's been some time. There has been not a lot of movement at the federal level, and that's been tough because I believe about 28% of the funds, the highway funds in New Hampshire, come from federal funds. So there's been so many competing interests in Washington D.C. that the there isn't a long-term funding source there. So it turns back to the states and how are you going to fix and resolve your problems. And there was significant activity in the motor fuel category, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures last year. And there was five states that actually enacted gas tax laws, and two of them were close to us, with Massachusetts and in Vermont. Maryland was also in that, Virginia and Wyoming. So there's been a lot of movement. We've seen a three-cent increase in Massachusetts. Vermont is an interesting one where they wanted to try to find a way to build the gas fund up, but also to make it so that it stabilized the revenues against, it made it more price sensitive, because we know that the gas tax is a small portion of the actual cost of a gallon of gas. So they were trying to find a way to stabilize it against that.
You know, Patrick, what do you think about one of the concerns that Representative Chandler raises, that here in New Hampshire, 42% of the money is going to go towards this one project? And, you know, I've heard people from the North Country and from Western New Hampshire saying, you know, that's great for you, but I'm not going to drive on that road but twice a year.
I think, it is the lifeline. It's the main artery that brings goods and services into the state of New Hampshire. So it is a vital major component to it. It's definitely something that needs to get done, and this is one of the funding sources that they're going to have to use to make it happen.
Representative Chandler, what do you think about that? I've heard businesses and others say, look, even if you never drive on I-93, you've benefited because of the increased economic benefits of having a better road.
Absolutely.
There.
As I said earlier, I-93 should be a priority. There's no question about that. The fact of the matter is, as I said, we, the House Public Works and Highways Committee and the House voted almost unanimously, I guess, to put $50 million in the 10-year highway plan to do I-93.
Already.
Which I don't know exactly how much they're going to be able to spend in 2 years, but we can come back in the next 10-year highway plan and give money to finish that project. So that's the point is, I don't think people realized, or some of the reps realized, or their constituents realized that the money that they were looking forward, we hear the complaints about their little secondary roads, and they're bad. 42% of the money they're going to be paying at the pump for whenever is not going to go to their own roads.
All right. We will start taking your calls in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. NHPR is looking at the challenges facing colleges and students with a special series, A Matter of Degrees, considers falling enrollment numbers and rising debt loads and the effects it all has on New Hampshire's economy. Join us all next week for A Matter of Degrees on NHPR and at nhpr.org. The series made possible with support from the Dairy Field School and Edvest in You. More on the implications of the state's first gas tax increase in 20 years on The Exchange, then a 10 on the Diane Rehm Show in aging infrastructure and the need for a new era in transportation policy. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from Cole Gardens in Concord, helping families start edible gardens with herbs, vegetables, fruit trees, and advice, helping you decorate with living color online at colegardens.com. And Vineyard Brands, importers of Marcus de Castro's wines from the Rioja region of northern Spain. Information on the web at vineyardbrands.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Canoy. Today in The Exchange, raising the gas tax, some of the details and discussion around a coming 4-cent increase in the per-gallon tax here in the Granite State. And a little bit later, we'll be looking at a proposed constitutional amendment to add sexual orientation as a group protected from discrimination. Right now, though, give us your thoughts, questions, comments about this gas tax increase, some of the particulars that we're hearing about it. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also find us on Twitter. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Gene Chandler is here, longtime state representative from Bartlett, Republican House Minority Leader. Pat Moody is also with us. He's with AAA Northern New England. And Gary Reno, State House reporter for the Union Leader in New Hampshire Sunday News. And gentlemen, here's an email from Marjorie, which says, we need to find new strategies for supporting our roads and bridges. As an owner of numerous hybrids, as well as a very heavy electric car, my cars use less gasoline than many others on the road, but probably drive an equal number of miles. She says the vehicles utilizing the roads are evolving, and the way New Hampshire finances the roads need to evolve to keep up with the changes. Marjorie, thank you. I know this is a point that's been discussed a lot. in this conversation. Pat Moody, I think to you first on this. We need to find more creative ways than the gas tax.
Right on, Marjorie. Definitely, in the short term, increasing the gas tax is the most effective way to generate the money needed. It's definitely proven politically challenging. It is not the long-term solution. We do need to find a successor to the motor fuel, and we're going to be able to really adequately fund and sustain and grow our system. She's right. Fuel-efficient cars and also cars that don't even use gas. So how are we going to attack it from that perspective? We do need to find a successor to the motor fuel tax.
Like her electric car. Marjorie, thanks for the email. So just really quickly, Pat, what are some of the options that other states are looking at?
You know, one of the things that's being explored out west is a vehicle miles traveled tax. That initially was deemed to be extremely challenging because of the technology that would have to be in place. But there's also some other issues with possibly fraud or privacy, you know, privacy, knowing where these cars are and how far they've traveled. So I think as technology evolves, that might become more of a possible solution.
Gary, what's other sorts of conversations came up in the legislature around the gas tax and Marjorie's point about new options?
Well, the legislature has been studying it for some time here for the last 4 or 5 years. They've had a committee looking at alternative ways of looking at raising money for the highway fund. And the issues, I mean, they're bringing up, the better the efficiency, the electric cars and so on. The other problem is the federal gas tax also is sort of having some of the same problems. So the federal money that you used to depend on now is either flat or a little
less. Or declining.
Or declining what you have. I mean, we tried a couple of years ago. They had a surcharge on registrations, which was very unpopular. And another thing they did was raise the vanity plate price, things like that. We've had one-time fixes here for a long time. That's one of them, the surcharge. We sold a highway to the turnpike system and all sorts of things like that. I mean, there's been a lot of discussion, but nothing has been really settled on. Nobody's really looking at one or two things.
Beyond the
gas tax. Although this whole issue with the miles traveled, I think it's Oregon or Washington that uses that. And with the technology today, it's a lot easier than it used to be to do something like that.
Representative Chandler, as I said, you've been on the Public Works and Highways Committee for a long time. What's being talked about on that committee in terms of alternatives?
Well, that committee and others, I think, especially with the increase in propane, liquid gas, hydrogen, all these other alternative fuel vehicles, in addition to just the regular hybrids, obviously cars are getting more mileage, so even gas vehicles. So that's one consideration. But these alternative fuels, we need to do something about that because now there are getting to be a great number of them, and they aren't paying anything, leave alone their fair share. So how that's going to be incorporated, I'm not sure, but that's being looked at. And once again, it's a little difficult to figure out. Do you charge everyone the same amount of money so the person that drives the 10,000 miles a year is going to pay $100 and the person that drives 100,000 pays that? So those are some of the problems. I think we will definitely have some kind of a proposal in this next legislative session. And I'm guessing whether it'll probably be on the registration fee of those vehicles probably because that's one way, the easiest way probably. So I definitely believe there will be something forthcoming in the next year.
We had a bill this year, Jan, if I'm right here, I think I am. We had a bill this year that would set a tax on natural gas that I think went through the House. I'm not sure that it's passed the Senate yet, and it may not, but there's attempts to deal with this issue.
All right,
so I really think something will be done because it's good that people are using these vehicles, but they're using the road, so they need to pay for it.
All right. Thanks for the email, Marjorie. The email address is exchange@nhpr.org. Phone number 1-800-892-6477. And Michael's waiting in Newmarket. Hi, Michael. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you very much.
Sure. Go ahead, Michael.
I was just calling. I support the gas tax. I think it's unfortunate they didn't pass it at 12 last year. But I know the problem is that people basically don't trust the legislature. I think as Rep. Chandler brought up, in terms of keeping it in the lockbox. I think people have no problem paying to have better roads if the funds that they were paying for were actually going towards roads. But, you know, they passed the law in 08, and since then they've been diverting a lot of those funds from the existing tax to other uses. Now, the law was set for this tax to be very specific, and near term it will be until there's a change again. I really think that they would be better off with a constitutional amendment making sure that this tax was clearly a gas tax as associated with transportation uses.
Michael, thanks a lot for the call, and I want to hear from everybody on this. But Pat Moody, you first. You know, Michael's tapping into a sentiment that Representative Chandler presented before as well, that, you know, people are fine paying a gas tax if they know it's going to go to those bumpy roads or those suspicious bridges. But beyond that, you know, they don't want it diverted. Is this an issue that has come up elsewhere, Pat Moody?
Yeah, it has. And you know what? Our members report the same thing. They don't have a problem paying as long as it's spent wisely and that it's not diverted to use for its intended purpose. And I think one good thing about or a couple good things about this bill in New Hampshire is the fact that they have put some protections in place where the funding is going to go to roads and bridges. All this new money that's generated by this 4.2 cents is going to roads and bridges. It's not going to be able to be diverted. Plus, they also put in a language to call for a study on the efficiency of the Department of Transportation to make sure all those funds are being spent wisely. So those are real positive things here.
Well, go ahead, Pat. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, Representative Chandler, when this has come up in the past, this issue of diversion and the issues that Michael, our caller, raises, people have said on the other side, yeah, but it's being diverted, quote unquote, to the safety department, which patrols the highways and keeps them safe. So that's legitimate.
And other departments. And the diversions, if you want to call them diversions, of the money that has gone to safety, for the most part, has been ruled constitutional by our Supreme Court. So the troopers out on the road, that's been ruled a constitutional use of highway fund money. It's some of the other uses in the Department of Safety and other departments that people have questions. And I will disagree with Pat on the issue of that this is protected money. It is not. The bill says that's where it's going to go. The day after this bill passes, the legislature could take that money and do whatever it wants just by saying notwithstanding the provisions, which is what it's done twice. I will point out that those in the previous two bienniums, this one and the one before, that money was protected also, but the legislature chose to divert some of it into Department of Safety and others. And some of the other departments that we have is Department of Justice, Highway Safety Administration, the AG's office, the judicial branch. So the money goes to a lot of different places. And some of that, as I said, some people argue nothing should go to safety. Well, we could make that argument. And Jeb Bradley has a bill in the Senate and is over in the House now, which starts along that process by saying some departments can't get highway fund money. So that's a step in the right direction. But if you take the $78 million that safety is getting now and just say, you got to replace it with something because we all think we need troopers, or most people think we need troopers out there. So that's the question is, what do we do? And that's why the bill was so, I think, such a good idea that we passed in 2008 the law that restricted percentage-wise how much the Department of Transportation got, 26%, and that was it. And 73%. I mean, safety got 26%.
So at least it was spelled out.
Right. But as I said, and that was done, but twice it's been violated and by the acts of the legislature. So people, this money that we just passed as an increased gas tax is no safer than what the legislature wants it to be.
Our phone number again for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. As we look at this new gas tax increase bill and some of the details included in it, let's go next, gentlemen, to Don in Concord. Hi, Don. You're on the Exchange. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Go ahead.
I'd like to start with, I was once, you know, a proponent of the gas tax. I thought that it was the right thing to do. You put it at the pump and then everybody pays it. Since your guests have brought it up, we have all these alternative fuel vehicles on the road that aren't paying that tax. I think the conversation, I mean, the legislator is what it is. The conversation around what to do to generate funds is very different than getting people to put the funds in the right spot. So, I mean, a good idea, well, my feeling is a good idea is to just everybody registers their vehicle. Why not have a tax at the point of registering your vehicle that everybody pays the same amount? Doesn't matter where you drive. I mean, doing a mileage tax isn't going to work because, you know, what if you live on the border and you're commuting back and forth in Massachusetts? Those are extra miles aren't being spent on New Hampshire roads. I think that just a general when you register your vehicle every year, there's a certain amount of money that everybody needs to pay, and then you can have the argument about where the legislators are going to put the money.
Question for you, Don, and I appreciate you calling in. So there's the fairness issue, though. Like, let's say they raise the registration to $50. I don't think it would go that high, but let's just say. And let's say you drive, 30 miles to work every day on the roads. I live really close to my job. Most days I don't drive. I either walk or ride my bike. But you and I are both paying $50. So you could say it's not fair to me because I'm not banging up the roads as much as you are. What do you think?
Well, I don't think that you should look at it that way.
You shouldn't look at it that way because...
Yep. If you look at that 1 mile stretch of road between your house and your work.
Sure.
And you have a vehicle and there's an issue where you've had an accident or whatever and a police officer needs to help you out. So what you're paying for is the ability to get the service on where you're traveling, not how far you're traveling.
And
so
also,
nobody would dispute that, it's not worth more money for me to have to pay for medical services or emergency services than it would be for you, depending on what you're driving.
Gotcha. And, Don, I'm not trying to argue with you. I just wanted to present that
and
get your thoughts on it. Yeah. Thank you for calling in. Gary, there's also the point that, even if you don't drive at all, if you live downtown and work downtown, you are still reaping the economic benefit of having a strong road system.
Right. I mean, you're getting the taxes from the business and community and from the various other rooms and meals tax and all that, which is only available because you have highways and people can get here, there, and whatever. I mean, the idea with the gas tax has always been that it's been a user fee, that you pay for what you use. And the more you drive, the more you pay.
That's why it's been politically palatable.
You know, and now we're talking about something like a one-time charge on the registration, and you said 50 probably wouldn't be that. I suspect it'll be a little higher than $50.
Really?
If you're going to try to make up the difference between the gas tax, if you're not going to have any gas tax. I mean, I think you're going to have some kind of hybrid there with gas tax registration and some sort of offset for something like that.
Yeah, Pat Moody, I'm interested in this idea that our caller raises and that our guests have raised possible higher registration fees coming in the future. It feels like less of a user fee for folks, but still politically acceptable. What do you think? I'd love your thoughts,
yeah,
Pat.
Yeah, I think politically it is extremely unpopular. Technically, it's easy to do this type of thing, but both publicly and politically, it's unpopular. And it, like Gary mentioned, it's only going to work if it was a very high increase in that type of fee. And some states they're looking at it differently. Probably might be a little bit better fit for what the caller was talking about. But truly, it is. You need to have a user fee. The more you use it, the more you pay. But some states are actually looking at it as a general sales tax and possibly tagging on a general sales tax to pay for the road system as well.
Yeah, I've heard about that in other states. That's not going to happen in Virginia, though, Pat. As you know, we don't have a broad-based sales tax.
Yeah, that's true. Virginia is the one that worked that out. So, yeah, it wouldn't work as well in New Hampshire.
Let's take another call. This is Ron in Gorham. Hi, Ron. Thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Sure.
What I'm worried about is the the gas tax and the money that comes from that. But the retirement fund is under great scrutiny, and they're behind on. They're in a quagmire to try to pay for the retirement fund. I'm worried about that money going into the retirement fund for the state workers as well, which I everybody should get their retirement fund. But when a guy's making like $96,000 a year to be retired as a state trooper, it gets out of control. It definitely is out of control. The other thing, too, is that Route 2 going into Gorham and Berlin is really, really, it's a wagon rut is what it is. It's not even a road anymore. I was wondering, would there be any money going into roads like that and trying to get a better system of people coming off I-93 to get into the Berlin-Gorham without all these obstructions in the road and bad roads. It doesn't help us up here because we're in a recessed area, And we're going down and down and down and down. There's more for sale signs on businesses and homes and everything because everybody's leaving because they can't afford it up here.
So you could afford, you'd love to have those improved roads. It might help the economy. You know, Representative Chandler, the last time I was in the North Country about 6 months ago, there were some pretty big bumps. Ron's right. What about that? You raised this issue earlier.
There are
pretty big bumps everywhere.
Statewide.
But, yeah.
And I think that was one of, there again, some of our and my concern that still exists. Unfortunately, how much is going to be done in the North Country, I don't know, because I don't mean to be repetitive on doing this, but 42% of this money is not going to go into these roads that people thought they were going to go to, and that's a lot of money. Now, how much would have been done if none of that went to the 93 project? I don't know, but it would have been 42% more anyway. So that, I think that's a big issue, that people that are waiting, standing out on the street corner waiting for the paver to come by are going to have a rude awakening because it, in some cases it isn't going to happen. And it's unfortunate because we do need that money. And if we're going to raise it, it should be going to what I think most people thought was its intended purposes.
Well, Ron, thank you very much for calling in. And just to wrap up with you gentlemen on this topic, we're going to turn a corner in just a moment and look at a proposed constitutional amendment. So, Representative Chandler, the governor says she'll sign this. When will we see that 4-cent increase at the pump?
Well, July 4th. Well, 2nd, I guess. Yeah.
Goes into effect
July
1st. We'll see it July 2nd. Pat Moody, what are your hopes for how this will be spent and, you know, the improved driving experiences that we might have here in northern New England?
You know, that you said that when will we see it at the pumps, first off, you may not see that translation at the pumps. You never, you know, like I said, it's a small portion of what you pay for a gallon of gas. So we saw in Vermont when their gas tax went up, it didn't actually translate through the way we thought it would. So you're not going to automatically see 4 cents go right onto the pump come July 1st. But yeah, we need to make our roads better. We need to make them safer for our families, less congestion. The potholes out there are rattling our cars loose. The average motorist is reporting that somewhere between $100 and $3,000 worth of car damage each year because of the roads that we're driving on. So fixing these roads with this, you know, Senator Rausch put it, it's about $16 a year is what it's going to equate to for the average driver. It's gonna really go a long way instead of paying that repair to your engine or your suspension or your tires.
All right. Pat Moody, good to have you as always. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Gene Chandler, it was good to see you too. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thanks.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll switch gears. We'll look at a proposed constitutional amendment. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, thousands of U.S. bridges in need of repair and the push for congressional action. Then some thoughts on kindness from award-winning author George Saunders, all coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from Seacoast Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, orthopedics and team physicians for the UNH Wildcats, providing repair for knee shoulder injuries or for UNH athletes, sosmed.org. And from Mill Falls at the Lake, Four Inns offering Winnipesaukee Lakefront Lodging, 7 restaurants, 12 marketplace shops, the Cascade Spa, and Ecal Lake Activity Center. MillFalls.com. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. A proposed constitutional amendment called CACR 17 would prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation. We'll spend the rest of the hour looking at the legal and political issues behind this. Gary Reno with the New Hampshire Union Leader remains with us. Also joining us now is John Graby. He's director of UNH Law School's Rudman Center. He teaches constitutional law, among other topics. And John, nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for inviting me, Laura.
Well, and Gary, let's just start with you. You attended these hearings on this bill, which passed the Senate unanimously. Is that right, Gary?
Yeah. So very much under the radar.
Yes, very much so, which is why we're covering it now. What would it specifically do, Gary?
Well, basically, all it really did was add sexual orientation to this list of forbidden discriminations, which include race, creed, sex, and so on. And it would simply do that. And the idea, the bill is sponsored by Senator Pierce from Hanover. And he said, you know, we have these great benefits here in the state now with gay marriage and civil unions and all this, but we haven't really preserved them in a way that we best can. So if we want to preserve them forever, we ought to put this in the Constitution.
So right now these are laws on the books, but they're not enshrined
in
so
the
to
Constitution.
Speak. Yeah.
And so this would simply enshrine it in the Constitution. Well, everything was well and good until we got to the public hearing in the House. And then several of the – or one of the bill sponsors, particularly Ed Butler, who is the chairman of the House Commerce Committee and owns a bed and breakfast inn up in Hart's location and a very long-time activist for the gay, lesbian community, says, I can't – I'm a sponsor of this, but I can't support it because we're basically leaving a group that's been together, who's fought for this since day one – the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. And he said, it's leaving the transgender community behind. And therefore, I cannot support this. And the issue he's had with it is when you say sexual orientation, you're really not talking about transgender. When you should be adding something like sexual, some other term that would cover them as well as everyone else. And several other people had similar positions in the House hearing. And there were other people who said, hey, let's get it going here. It's great. But then when we came to the committee deciding what they were going to do, they decided that people really weren't ready for this, that this didn't have enough publicity, that people really weren't aware of what was going on. And do you really want to put it on the ballot in November and see it go down less than a majority? You actually may be hurting the cause if you do that. You may be setting it back years, in maybe 5 or 6 or 7 elections before you can ever put it back on the ballot. So they decided to pull it back and send it to interim study.
Interesting. And it has been below the radar, even though it flew through the Senate, unanimously.
Yep.
All right. Well, lots more to untangle from this. But let me also invite our listeners to join us. The number here in the exchange, if you have questions or comments or thoughts about this proposed constitutional amendment to prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And John Graby, New Hampshire, as Gary told us, already has laws on the books forbidding this type of discrimination based on sexual orientation. So why put it in the Constitution? What more does this accomplish?
Well, it moves the protection up to a higher level, if you will. I mean, the laws that are protect against discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, there's a state statute that does so that was passed in 1998. That could be repealed, theoretically, at any time. So if,
by
you know,
a future legislature.
That's right. If the legislature comes in and has a, you know, a sympathetic governor, that that provision could be altered and the protection written into the statute could be taken out. By putting it into the state constitution, you make it much more difficult in the future by mere legislative majority to go backwards on any of the rights that have been recognized thus far.
And have any other states done this, John?
No other state has put a ban on discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation explicitly in its state constitution.
Yeah. Gary, what's the significance in New Hampshire possibly going first on this? It doesn't sound like this is going to move forward, but the first to really look at it.
Well, I mean, the Senator Pierce's big push was, hey, we were the first to allow gay marriage legislatively. Others were doing it through the court system and so on. We were the first to do this and add sex discrimination, sexual orientation to various other things, too. So we ought to be the first to do this. And I got some pushback when people were saying, well, maybe in this one we may not want to be first. So
still some issues or concerns.
Concerned or straightened out, yeah.
Here's an email that came in from Jordan in Auburn who says, some would argue this is unneeded, that this type of discrimination doesn't happen and is just an invite for frivolous lawsuits. Jordan says, did black men and women being discriminated against cause frivolous lawsuits when they fought for freedom to just be what their genetics made them as? We in turn say that if you truly don't discriminate, then you have nothing to fear from this law. And moreover, if we can be fired for having a photo of our spouse on our desk or can't find a place to live because of someone else's cruel views, then there is a problem and one that can be easily fixed. Jordan, thank you for the email. Gary Reno, this sounds like an argument in favor and against an argument that I'm wondering if it came up in the hearings. Frivolous lawsuits. This could open the door to frivolous lawsuits.
It did come up. I mean, people were saying it does open the door to all these people filing lawsuits and one after the other, and because somebody doesn't want to be a photographer at your wedding or somebody doesn't want to cater your wedding or something. Well, we already have those laws on the books, that's for sure. And if you're going to file lawsuits, you could file lawsuits now concerning those frivolous lawsuits, if you will.
Yeah, what about this, John Graby? At the federal level, where you spend most of your time, what concerns have come up from the private sector when it comes to anti-discrimination laws or constitutional amendments aimed at discrimination?
Well, as things are currently structured in New Hampshire, the anti-discrimination bar extends to private businesses. One argument for this amendment would be that it also then extends the anti-discrimination protections to state government. At the federal level, what we see arising right now, and this is taking place as we speak in other places around the country, is the clash between the anti-discrimination principle and the religious freedom principle. There are people who claim that on the basis of their religious beliefs, protected under federal law by the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment, that they have an entitlement, for example, not to rent an apartment to a same-sex couple if they have a religious objection to that, if they own a building and are landlords, that it should fall within their free exercise rights not to welcome into their building somebody or some couple, rather, that violate their religious beliefs. And so anti-discrimination and free exercise are often in tension with one another. The Hobby Lobby case that was argued to the U.S. Supreme Court just a few weeks ago raises this issue. The question there is whether companies need to extend, pursuant to the Affordable Care Act, all forms of birth control required by the act when the companies claim a religious objection to certain forms of birth control that they regard as abortion agents, basically. This dynamic of tension between a promise of anti-discrimination and yet the freedom to freely exercise religion, that's really where I think the action is going to be with respect to, future lawsuits.
Well, it's really interesting. And yet we see, as Jordan points out, that maybe half a century ago, someone might have made the argument that I won't rent to an interracial couple. Nobody would make that argument today.
That's right. That's the argument against it, is that that free exercise certainly would protect the right of a church not to solemnize a marriage that is in tension with its religious teachings, but that we live in a society where there are people of different beliefs and different lifestyles, and that we have adopted an anti-discrimination default rule. I'm not saying that those arguments are going to prevail, but there are those who would say that the free exercise right should be more broadly construed to permit people to engage in a private choice not to interact with or do business with or serve couples that they are, in moral disapproval of.
All right. Well, Jordan, thank you for the email. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. In this hour of the exchange, we're looking at a proposed constitutional amendment to prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation. Taking your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. And Renee's calling from Contoocook. Hi, Renee. Thanks for joining us. Go ahead.
Yeah. I have four daughters, one of whom is gay, and I can't imagine that under the Constitution she would be treated differently than her three sisters. And I feel like this country is about learning what freedom and protection means, whether it's black people, women. We've learned over time. And now it's time for us to learn that gay people need to be protected.
Renee, what about the thought that Gary Reno presented before from the legislature that, we've got laws on the books, so we don't need to go this extra step to the Constitution? What do you think?
We all live under the Constitution. And it is our protection. And I feel that it needs to cover all of our people. And as far as transgendered people, once that will be the next step. I feel like we learn over time.
Well, Renee, thank you very much for calling in. And Gary, you know, you already described the objections from some of the original supporters of this, that it didn't represent transgendered folks. What were the arguments from the right on this?
From the right?
It seemed like you sort of had political conservatives making some arguments and some liberals making arguments.
Well, I mean, you had certainly the religious community came out and they were very much opposed to this.
What did they say?
Well, they're basically saying this is, as you know, he brought up, it's our right and in our religion, it's our belief that this is wrong. This is morally wrong. And you're putting this in, you want to put this into the Constitution. It is offensive to us. On the other hand, there were others who were saying, why do we need this? I mean, do we need a laundry list of things here, you know, race, creed, what are we going to add next? We don't really want to do that to the Constitution. You want something that's more general and more broad. And so it was going back and forth, and which is basically why the committee said we're going to study an interim study, which really is a polite death in the second term of a legislature. Because the next legislature doesn't have to take this up at all. So it's really polite death.
Because the next legislature will be comprised of different
people.
Yeah. What was the significance, or was it mentioned, Gary, at these hearings in the Senate and the House? Did people talk a lot about the significance of New Hampshire going first on this?
They did, to some extent. I think, you know, we all like to be first in the nation, presidential, first in this and that. But I think most people were kind of saying, this is a good idea, but maybe it needs to be refined and it needs to be taken. We need to take a little closer look at it before we really jump with both feet into the fire.
John Grabe, Gary mentioned some of the arguments that came up against this, you know, the laundry list, another category. As someone who studies constitutional law, what are your thoughts on that debate?
Well, that was an issue that came up, I believe, in the Senate hearing, which is, you know, I think some people initially said, why don't we amend the Constitution just to ban discrimination generally and take the list of categories? Currently, the Constitution makes reference to race, creed, color, sex, and national origin. The problem with taking out categories, the problem without naming things, is that all laws discriminate. When you really think about it, all laws that regulate people divide people into groups, and that's the definition of discrimination. So a murder law discriminates between people who've committed the act of murder and people who haven't, and impose, you know, a penalty on that group of people. And so, you know, if you don't start to list what are the categories that legislatures cannot discriminate on the basis of, you know, you run into the problem that would truly throw the door open to lawsuits of all sorts. So, I mean, in my view, if you do want to enshrine an anti-discrimination principle that would effectively protect against sexual orientation, I think the better way to go is to specifically enumerate it and to specifically mention it in the Constitution. I think that, you know, I think that it would be necessary for clarity as we go forward and actually to reduce the prospect of litigation.
There is a tension, though, isn't there, John, that, you know, some people say the Constitution should be a clean, clear document, and others say, no, we really need to spell this stuff out.
Absolutely. You don't want it, you know, the famous quote from Chief Justice John Marsh, you don't want it to have the prolixity of a legal code. You want it to be a document that captures our values at an appropriate level of generality. And that's the tension there. I mean, the question is, you know, you don't want it to start to become, you know, a document that goes on and on and on and is amended at every constitution, at every election, rather. At that point, it really ceases to function as a constitution. It's an argument about drawing an appropriate balance.
Does the federal constitution, John, also make the same prohibitions against discrimination based on those other categories, not sexual orientation? But
no, it has an equal protection clause in the 14th Amendment that just guarantees equal protection of the laws. That amendment was adopted, though, in the context of the nation emerging from the Civil War, and it was clearly understood at the time that the Equal Protection Clause applied to the newly freed slaves. We have since, by judicial construction, expanded the equal protection of the 14th Amendment to other groups. But there is not a list. There's not an enumeration in the federal Constitution.
Is there an argument when we look at this New Hampshire proposal to say, you know, you've already got equal protection under the federal Constitution. You don't need this at the state level.
Well, under the federal Constitution, we still have not gone to the level of recognizing that discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation is to be treated the same way as discrimination on the basis of race or even gender. The Supreme Court's been coming closer. You know, last June it issued a couple of decisions in the context of same-sex marriage that suggested that we may be on a trajectory toward that. But under federal law, there is no constitutional right not to be discriminated against on the basis of your sexual orientation. That is analogous to the constitutional right we have not to be discriminated against on the basis of our race.
And Gary, getting back to New Hampshire, how hard is it to amend the New Hampshire Constitution? It's a pretty high bar, isn't it?
It is. I mean, you have to have 3/5 of the House, 3/5 of the Senate, and then it gets put onto the general election ballot, and then it needs a 2/3 majority of the general election, of those voting in a general election. So it's a very high bar. And we've had, you know, the Constitution has been amended quite a few times, but largely it's very rare. It doesn't happen every election, that's for sure. In the last few elections, I don't think the last constitutional amendment we passed had to do with representation in House districts. And that was the last one, and that was a couple of years ago.
So to end the story on this particular proposal, Gary, sounds like gone for now, but we'll be looking at it again in the future.
You know, it's dead in the House, but it's coming. You know, it's like a lot of things. As time goes on, attitudes change, and then probably in 6 or 7 legislatures, we'll see something like this go through.
All right. Well, great to talk to both of you. Gary, thank you so much for being here. That's Gary Reno, State House reporter for the Union Leader in New Hampshire Sunday News. And John Grabe, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
John Grabe is director of UNH Law School's Rudman Center. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, changing childbirth choices. Due to cultural shifts and medical concerns, more women around the country, and especially in the Granite State, are deciding against having their babies in the hospital. The state's medical community is taking note, some with major concern, and others trying to work out new arrangements to accommodate this trend. Send us your thoughts by email or Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
Diane Rehm Show next at 10 o'clock on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from you, our listeners, and from Dartmouth-Hitchcock, primary care doctors and nurses who put you at the center of health. 13 locations statewide. Information at d-hdocs.org. And Red River Theater is a Concord region's nonprofit independent movie theater. A list of current movies and membership information online at redriver.org.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO, Concord, 89.1.
WEVS, Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH, Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN, Keene, 90.7.
WEVC, Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ, Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF, Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ, Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. 63,000 bridges in the U.S. have been deemed structurally deficient, not on the verge of collapse, but in serious need of repair. This is actually good news. An increase in federal spending in the past few years has slightly lowered